Okay, will the real John please stand up? That was the best joke anybody's played on me. That was really good. I'm going to be talking about you guys from the podium in the future. Okay, we're going to try and cover a lot this morning, and so what we're going to try and get through, I want to do just a little more on 6 and 7 as we read in an Earl Treat story as they went, they did talk about character defects in great length. So if you have this sheet, it says Emotional Sobriety Workshop. And all what it does is it has some major character defects that we deal with. These are some of the harder ones to get rid of. And we just talk a little bit about the defect, and then we talk a little bit about the solution. And these are some of the things when you harbor some of these defects that we're going to be talking about. These are the ones that really shut you off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Okay, and we have our two readers up here again. David and don't tell me, Clarissa. David and Clarissa. Okay, I finally got it. It only took me the whole weekend. Okay, and so we're not going to read all this other stuff because we're going to try and cut a little time off. But what we're going to read is the defect, and then we're going to read the solution. And David is going to read the defect, and Clarissa is going to read the solution. So you want to take anger.
Anger.
Read into the mic, too.
Anger is a deadly poison to sanity and serenity, a special punch to those who want to be God in their own lives. Its impact succeeds in obliterating reason and self-control. One can enjoy being a human hurricane while plunging into the depths of this emotional intoxicant. Sometimes the debris left after this storm is staggering.
The solution? If just one whiff of anger sets up the compulsion to act on it, practice total abstinence, restraint of pen and tongue. Page 91 in the 12 and 12, if we were to live, we had to be free of anger. Page 66 in the big book. This does not mean we stuff anger. It means we step 10 anger, which is really 4 through 9. Remember, love and tolerance is our code. Step 10 in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Should the compulsion get the upper hand, third and fifth step it when sanity has returned. Strength to resist taking the first drink of anger comes from this daily use of the 12 steps, especially 6 and 7, slogans, and willingness to assume responsibility.
Okay, so if you know that you're going through some of these character defects, you might just take a look at the solutions and the suggestions we have and try them. And look at, we've got page numbers, and it tells you where to find some of the solutions to help you deal with these particular character defects. Okay, so let's go to the next page. Oh, no, we got to take intolerance. And David's going to read the character defect.
Intolerance. An emotional inebriate which follows up 12-step work. It succeeds in blocking awareness of what has been shared with one in the program. It causes emotional biases and prejudices. A spirit of intolerance might repel alcoholics whose lives could have been saved had it not been for such stupidity. Page 103 in the big book.
Okay, and so this really applies to some of us when we're talking about intolerance. Some of us have intolerance how other people work their program, intolerance of how one big book thumper worked their program compared to another big book thumper. So this is pretty appropriate. Okay, let's go ahead and read about the solution.
Daily doses of live and let live, plus an open mind. Seek to develop compassion, the highest form of emotional maturity. Begin with step 6 and 7. Step 10, love and tolerance is our code. And page 84 in the big book. Then prayer of St. Francis. Just page 99, step 11 in the 12 and 12. We can also begin with self-compassion, that is, be good to yourself. Self-compassion means realizing the meaning, quality, and intensity of one's own emotions. Do not use step 10 to beat yourself up. Step 11 in the big book says we must be careful not to drift into remorse or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. And it's page 86. The emotional identification of self enables you to feel free for others. Learn to distinguish between a person and his behavior and detach from the problem, but not the person.
David, self-pity.
Self-pity. Self-pity is one of the most unhappy and consuming defects that we know. It is a bar to all spiritual progress and can cut off all effective communication with our fellows because of its inordinate demands for attention and sympathy. It is a model and form of martyrdom.
Martyrdom.
Mm-hmm. Martyrdom, which we can ill afford. Page 238, as Bill sees it. Pour me, pour me, pour me another drink.
Solution.
Steps 6 and 7, doing gratitude list. 11-step prayer in the Big Book on page 86. We ask God to direct our thinking, especially that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Avoid then the deliberate manufacture of misery. But if trouble comes, cheerfully capitalize it as an opportunity to demonstrate his omnipotence. Hourly doses of daily gratitude, appreciation, and admission of God's grace. Stop hanging out in mental dumps. Stop keeping company with the bad companions of resentment, fear, and selfishness. Don't flirt with self-justification and self-righteousness, which will sweet-talk you into a dive. Total abstinence is hardly possible unless self-pity trips are replaced with being others-centered. Substitute daily contacts with a higher power and group members for the frequent visits to the self-pity bars.
Okay. Resentment, David.
An emotional intoxicant distilled from character defects, guaranteed to impede progress in steps 3 and 11. Drinking of resentment poisons spiritual progress, often leads to emotional enslavement to the hated people and things. An effective way to stay drunk on resentment is to bar hop from anger to self-pity, to intolerance, to jealousy, to fear, then home to an unbelievable hangover of depression.
Got more on resentment. It's a big one.
Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When this malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Page 64 of Alcoholics Anonymous. Harboring resentment is infinitely grave, for then we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Page 3 is Bill Season. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely great. In the Big Book, page 66. No God, no peace. No God, no peace.
Solution.
Step 4 and 4th step prayer. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. Be sure to put it down on paper in the fourth column, looking at our part, a must. Step 10, 11, and 12. Helping others can get us out of ourselves long enough for God to get in to remove the resentment.
Okay. Jealousy.
Jealousy. Keep it always in sight that we are dealing with that most terrible human emotion, jealousy. Page 82 of Alcoholics Anonymous. The greatest enemies of us alcoholics are resentment, jealousy, envy, frustration, and fear. Page 145 of the Big Book. A powerful concoction of resentment, fear, envy, and low self-esteem, plus major insecurity, drink freely and often from jealousy allows one to lose self-control. This mental blend diminishes peace of mind and dangerously threatens faith and trust in self, others, and higher power. Jealousy brought into the program hurts the group. The program hurts the group unity and fellowship. It hurts AA and Al-Anon as a whole.
How many have you seen people jealous in the program? And it hurts AA as a whole. Love and tolerance in the program is one of the most important places to practice it, aside from home. Okay, go ahead.
Solution: recovery is possible through daily attention to spiritual needs. Humility daily injected disperses the residual effects of jealousy. Definitions of humility. Number one, humility, a word often misunderstood to those who have made progress in AA. It amounts to a clear recognition of what and who we are, followed by a sincere attempt to become what we could be. That's page 58, step 5 in the 12 and 12. Not thinking less of ourselves, but thinking of ourselves less. And 3, being teachable. A step 4 and step 5 reveals the exact nature of one's compulsion to this green-eyed monster. Steps 6 and 7 also put to root this insidious mind-bender. Write it down, talk about it one-to-one, not as a meeting, at a meeting level. Remember to carry the message to the meeting, tradition 5, and the mess to your sponsor, or whoever has what you want. Get out of yourself and help someone else. Doing any kind of esteemable acts builds self-esteem.
Depression.
Definitely an emotional intoxicant that is a downer. Dangerous to serenity. One gulp plunges one into an abyss of remorse, regret, and rejection. He floats around in an internal hell, unable to touch base with any solid ground of balance. Emotional vision is blurred. Cannot see the helping outstretched hand. Emotional hearing is dulled. Cannot hear the words of encouragement and strength. Emotional touch is deadened. Cannot feel love. Emotional taste is bland. Cannot go past taste of isolation and melancholy. Emotional smell is weakened. Cannot perceive essence of harmony and fellowship. The whole being is so drugged by depression that realistic contact with self and others is suspended.
Who's ever experienced depression at this level? This is really dark. You know, it's really dark. And I'm just so thankful that some people don't have to experience it. I never experienced it till just a couple years ago, but it sure did open me up to some of the people I sponsor that suffer depression. Okay, solution.
What step are you on? If you can honestly say you are current on your steps and giving back, then you might have to turn to page 133 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Pouring yourself into the steps and vigorously giving back usually takes care of depression. It gives us a purpose to live. Page 33 in the Big Book says, we are sure...
133. Pages are very important. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
We are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. Page 77 says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. When we do this, we experience the fourth dimension of existence that Bill describes on page 8 of the Big Book. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. Page 133 in the Big Book also says, a bodily badly burned by alcohol does not often recover overnight, nor do twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. We're convinced that a spiritual mode of living is a most powerful health restoration.
Restorative. There's more.
Oh. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And it's on page 64 in the Big Book. That does not mean that the steps cure cancer or grave emotional and mental disorders. It does mean God can then direct us to the help we need. See page 133 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But this does not mean that we disregard human health measures. God has abundantly supplied this world with fine doctors, psychologists, and practitioners of various kinds. Do not hesitate to take your health problems to such persons. Most of them give freely of themselves, that their fellows may enjoy sound minds and bodies. Try to remember that through God, though God has wronged
Ross miracles
among us, we should never belittle a good doctor or psychiatrist.
And you've probably noticed that I've pointed out this page several times, and it's because I've had two women that I have sponsored that had grave emotional and mental disorders. And because of hearing people in Alcoholics Anonymous put down the psychiatric effort and medication, both of them choose to commit suicide rather than take medication or to see a psychiatrist. And so I am adamant about, if you're current in your steps, you've done everything that you can do in this program, you're working with others, and you're still suffering to that degree that you don't have a will to live, then you might seek outside help. You might have issues other than alcoholism. You know, and in Doctor's Opinion, it talks about it when it describes some of those alcoholics, manic depressives. And, you know, sometimes some of us come in here that are real alcoholics that have outside disorders and that we might have to seek help in other areas. And the Big Book makes room for that. Okay, blame.
Blame. A keen, smooth, emotional beverage. With blame, all inhibitions and self-defects are freed and vented on all those faltering, imperfect creatures out there. A few swigs of blame allows one to go to the core of his own magnificent nature and expose the blundering of those who are stumbling blocks in his path to well-earned, overdue and deserved glory. As long as a person can hold his blame, he feels no need to sober up and take a look at himself. When the intoxication from blame begins to wear off, one can keep the buzz going by mixing his drinks. usually shots of criticism, intolerance, resentment, and dishonesty. He will then alternate between being ecstatically happy and falling down, crying drunk. When he survives the hangover, he only remembers the sweet wallop his Coco Loco gave him, and he can hardly wait for the next big binge. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. Page 62 of the Big Book.
Solution.
Daily intake of inventory vitamins. With the emotional tone considerably improved from the inventory vitamins, the need to put oneself at the mercy of any wind that blows on one's world is removed. It is replaced with total abstinence from blame. Total abstinence brings miracles of tolerance, grace, rich spiritual rewards, reflected in a life of real fulfillment. Page 268
of
One Day at a Time. Much that happens to me, good or bad, is self-created. It's page 347 of One Day at a Time. A new beginning is provided every day, and the 24 hours can be started over any time the need arises, and that is good medicine to take.
Fear.
Fear. Nothing is more self-centered than fear. The short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Big Book, page 67 to 68. We are not talking about healthy fear. We are talking about unhealthy fear. There is a difference. It is healthy to be afraid of taking a drink or crossing the street on a red light. Unhealthy fear is being afraid to look for a job or to go back to school, go out town, or just talk to people. A lot of people have phobias which
debilitate
them. Unhealthy fear.
Solution.
Walking through fear is exercising faith. Nowhere in the first 164 pages in the Big Book does it say you cannot have fear and faith at the same time. What it says is the verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. Page 68 in the Fear Inventory. You don't need courage unless you are afraid. Practice courage by walking through fear after doing steps 4 and 5. The fear prayer on page 68 says we ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. Then it says at once we commenced to outgrow fear. It does not say we at once outgrow fear. Steps 6 and 7, fear, and know when we start. Walking through fear, we are making amends to ourselves and those we have hurt because of our fear. Continue to watch for fear in step 10 and in step 11 in the Big Book. It says we might have to take some corrective measures. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. That's page 86. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. That's page 84.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, that's all we're going to read on this. We just wanted to touch on those major character defects, and now we're going to pick up in the Big Book on page 76. And move on to steps 8 and 9. Okay, and we'll start. Does everybody have page 76 in the Big Book? I guess I got to give you a few minutes. And what time does that clock say? Does anybody see it? Does it say 9 o'clock?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, good. We did that in a half hour. Okay, so I guess what we'll do is at 9:30 we'll take a break. Or do you want to go on till 10 and take a break? We'll just see how we feel at 9:30. See how you guys look. If you're looking antsy, we'll take a break. Okay. Take the paragraph that says, now we need more action. David.
Now we need more action. Without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at the steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took our inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we could go to any lengths for victory over alcohol.
Okay, so I want you to go to your format. Now, you have your inventory. Now, if you want, you can just hang on to your inventory, which has all your names, and you can just scribble on it and do what you want on it, or else you can take it and organize it. So go to your format that I gave you, On page 9, it says steps 8 and 9. And this is what my sponsor had me do. She had me take my inventory and take all those names that were on it and put them in columns. So look at your inventory. And the first column is short-term amends. So if I can do it within 6 months, that name goes in that column. The second column is long-term amends. That it doesn't matter how long it takes me. She said as long as I was willing, doing whatever I could, it didn't matter how long it took me. Like I had to make $10 a month payments to a lot of creditors, that church. I made $20 a month payments to the church I stole from. All those long, it took me 12 years to finish that column, my middle column, my long-term amends, and they were mostly financial. And when I wrote on my inventory, I'm resentful at myself because I was a thief. I had to list in that middle column everybody I stole from. If I could make amends to them. If I couldn't reach them, then it had to go into the last column. The third column is list ways of making amends to people who are dead or institutions you cannot contact. That means that I can't get away with anything just because I can't find them. I still have to find, in this book we're going to read, if you can't find somebody or if you can't meet with them face-to-face, somebody who's deceased, you can't meet with them face-to-face, you write them an honest letter. So that would go in this column if someone is deceased. When I was in Colorado, I ran out this dentist. I had an emergency dental problem, and the dentist took care of me, and he billed me, and then I ended up running back to California. And so I ran out on his dentist pill and phone bills and everything I had out in Colorado, I ran out on him. And I started making payments. This was years later. I started making payments to the phone companies. They had no record of it. They thought I was a nut, but I did it anyway. But to the dentist, I could not remember his name for anything. And nobody in Colorado would have anything to do with me. They wouldn't talk to me, so I couldn't get that kind of assistance. So my sponsor had me put dentist, the amount of money, in this column, and she told me to go to the city where I lived. I had to go to a dentist in Long Beach and give him $50 to apply to the bill of someone who couldn't pay. So that, and then I ran out on I owed $1,000 rent to somebody, and this was in Long Beach. I ran out on that. I owed him $1,000 bill. And the guy who owned the building was a foreigner, and I did everything possible to find this guy. I mean, I even got real estate agents to look up the present owner because he no longer owned it, and she got me, and she wasn't supposed to do this, but she got me the number of the present owner. I called the present owner, and I asked him if he knew what happened to the person he bought the building from. He had no idea. It was suspected that he moved back to the country he came from, and I have no idea what country that was, so I could not make those amends to him directly. So my sponsor had me make financial amends by making $20 a month payments to a homeless shelter. So we've always found ways for me to make amends. And so if that's where it falls, it's somebody you can't reach, and even if it's a dollar amount, it goes in this column, and you find a charity or you do some way of making amends to somehow. Somehow you got to work it out. It's just like, it's just the thing that cleans everything out from here and gives you that feeling of self-esteem. So you need to do it, and I needed to do it and not ignore it. And then you might even die at the age of 80 still making $10 and $20 payments, but at least you're taking actions. You're taking the actions, and that's all that really matters, is that you're taking those actions. Okay. Usually family members go in here. Usually financial go in here. People who are dead or institutions you can't get hold of are in here. If you did an overall view on your inventory and you just, put I'm a thief, just like I said earlier, then this is where I list everybody I stole from. We'll go on this page. If I just said I'm a liar, and I need to make amends for lying, then I'm going to list everybody that I lied to. That's when it goes on this page. That kind of stuff goes on this page. Does anybody have any questions? I don't know if I want to open myself up to this, but okay.
I'm going to wait for the very end. But you use the example dentist.
Uh-huh.
Say, 15 years ago.
If you took petty cash.
Okay,
I've done both kinds. I have gone to employers directly and said that, you know, I was an alcoholic, and I at this one company I took $40 from, and I justified it because they took out insurance after I quit, which or after I was fired, which, you know, I justified taking it or whatever. Anyway, and I sent the money back to them. I sent it. I don't know why I sent it, but I chose to send it and wrote a letter. I don't know if I couldn't reach them or I can't remember. But anyway, they sent it back to me because everybody who was there was no longer there. So I had to find another thing. I had to do something else with that money. But I also had my sponsor tell me on certain things because I, you know, I was very unemployable. And the few jobs I had, you know, drinking, I you know, got fired or quit or something like that and had my make my living other ways. And so, you know, to list those jobs, to go back to those jobs, you know, might damage me because I had a list a few of them on there, you know, that might damage. So I anonymously, she allowed me, and this is why sponsorship's important because I know some of you have a sponsor that's not going to let you do stuff anonymously. My sponsor did. She said I needed to be able to list some of these people down so I could get another job, so to send the money back anonymously. And so I've done that to make sure that they got their money. And another thing she had me do is I did not have a high school diploma. And this is why we talk about rigorous honesty and not brutal honesty, and there's gray areas in this area. She had me, when I started filling out applications, I couldn't get a job because I didn't have a high school diploma, and that was a very big deal. And she told me that go ahead and lie on my application because it's probably, God would prefer that I lie on my application and get a job, get off of welfare, be self-supporting to my own contributions than to, you know, at the risk of not being honest, remain on welfare and unemployable. And so the first application I lied on, and all I said is I had a high school diploma. They never checked, and I got that job, and I was there for 10 years. And I went back to school, and I did get a high school diploma. And then after I was assistant administrator, I went back and made amends. You know, so, I mean, sponsorship's important, and I believe God knows what you need. You know, and God, when you're really ready, God's going to put the right person in your life. If it's a person that's not going to let you do things the way my sponsor let me do it, my sponsor is really pretty brutal, you know, but there were cases that she gave me some leverage so that I could get out there and get on my feet and start being self-supporting through my own contributions. You know, she didn't jeopardize me in any way, you know, and I was very blessed to have the kind of sponsorship that I have. But I know other people who would never, ever let them, you know, they had to do some brutal stuff and get bad name on their employment records and all kinds of stuff because their sponsors, you know, and that's probably what they needed. You know, they probably would have gotten an inch and taken a mile. So I believe that God's in charge, and when you're really ready, just sponsorship's important, and just know that God's in charge, and you're going to get the kind of sponsorship you need. Anybody else have any questions?
What about drugs? If you've taken money from drug dealers?
That's funny. I just... I know what my sponsor, she'd say. She'd say, make amends by giving money to a rehab. I mean, I don't know. And I just know somebody I've been with this weekend talked to me about going back to a drug dealer, and I just went, you know. And so, but when we talked about it a little bit, his reasoning was kind of valid. So that can be a gray area also. This is where you have to be, you know, really intuitive with your higher power. And your sponsor, the three of you, God and your sponsor, make that decision. My recommendation is don't go near a drug dealer. anybody else have any questions? Yes. Repeat that. He said he was, there were names of people that he, you know, he couldn't find where they were or anything. And so what he was in the car, you know, and I'm sure you felt some relief that you couldn't find these people. He's in the car, and all of a sudden there's a radio, something on the radio talks about how you can locate people if you have certain information. You just write this address for $10. They can locate anybody. And he just happened not to get the address written down in time. And so that was his excuse was, oh, good, I didn't get the address. And then a week later, they repeated the broadcast. So he was getting directed by his higher power. Yes.
I've started to make some amends, and on a couple of the financial ones, when I found the people and told them what I was doing, they were willing to let me off the hook. One was a dentist, coincidentally. Another one was a drug dealer. And In one instance, I took that option. In the other instance, I started making payments to the man. But I have others on the list, more drug dealers, liquor companies that I stole from, and they don't need the money, and I'm still puzzled over how to handle those things. And I was wondering if you had any input on that.
Do you have a sponsor? I'm not it. No, and you know what? I'll tell you one thing how I feel about it, especially when you're financially strapped and all that, and you're depending on God as your employer. You know, God is our provider. I mean, it's God's money. And if somebody, this is my personal opinion, if somebody tells you that they really don't want it, and they're just fine with the amends, it's none of your business. It's none of my business how God takes care of us. If I don't have the money to really pay somebody back, and I'm willing to make little teeny payments, and they say, don't bother, I'm just so happy you're sober, I wouldn't worry about it. As long as you made the amends and you were willing, and it's not that, I mean, it's none of your business how God takes care of you. And later on when you have money, then find another way to give back. Give back to another drunk here that you know, is suffering and struggling. That might need a place to stay or money for a bus ride or gas for his car. That's how I'd work that out. But I know at certain times it's none of our business how God takes care of us. I've struggled. I've had many years where, you know, for someone to say they didn't need the money, it was just, you know, I don't know if I ever experienced that, but I know that.
Charlotte's turn. We have been speaking to you of serious, sometimes tragic things.
We have been speaking to you of serious, sometimes tragic things. We have been dealing with alcohol in its worst aspect, but we aren't a glum lot. If newcomers could see no joy or fun in our existence, they wouldn't want it. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. We try not to indulge in cynicism over the state of the nations, nor do we carry the world's troubles on our shoulders. When we see a man sinking into the mire that is alcoholism, we give him first aid and place what we have at his disposal. For his sake, we do not recount and almost relive.
We do recount.
We do recount and almost relive the horrors of our past. But those of us who have tried to shoulder the entire burden and trouble of others find we are soon overcome by them. So we think cheerfulness and laughter make for usefulness. Outsiders are sometimes shocked when we burst into merriment over a seemingly tragic experience out of the past. But why shouldn't we laugh? We have recovered and have been given the power to help others.
And I still get chills when I read that. We have recovered and we've been given the power to help others. Okay, turn to page. Go ahead and read. Everybody knows those that are in bad health seldom play. Up to the end of the... You want to take that, beloved? Check.
Well.
Everybody knows at the very bottom where she just left off. And then go up to the top of 33.
Everybody knows that those in bad health and those who seldom play do not laugh much. So let each family play together or separately as much as the circumstances warrant. We are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. We cannot subscribe to the belief that this is life is a veil of tears, though it once was just that for many of us. But it is clear that we made our own misery. God didn't do it. Avoid, then, the deliberate manufacturing of misery. But if trouble comes cheerfully, capitalize it as an opportunity to demonstrate his
omnipotence.
Thank you.
Sometimes I have hard with that word cheerfully. It was very cheerfully hard to do with my daughter's kidnap and rape. But I did demonstrate his omnipotence. Okay, let's turn to page 151. Okay, Charlotte, now and then a serious drinker.
Now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. Feel better. Work better. Having a better time. And ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such sally. We know our friend is like the boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take half a dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end.
Okay, how many of you thought the jumping off place when you made the decision to stop drinking? A few of you? Most of you know the jumping off place is somebody who's sober that's making the decision to work the steps? or wish for the end. They can't imagine life with alcohol or without alcohol. They haven't done the work to be relieved of the obsession. That's the jumping off place. Okay. Chuck, you want to take...
We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing. But am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum, like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a significant substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in the Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfying 3 years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you.
Page 164. Okay. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. I really want to thank you for allowing me to be here, and I know today I've been catapulted into what Bill calls that fourth dimension of existence. As I said earlier, today I know happiness, I know peace, and I know usefulness. Thank you for letting me be of service this weekend.